side. Honor them crazy murderers, we never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a can just see, hoping up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
And here we go, folks. It is Monday, May the 8th, 2023, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope you're all doing well. Very hearty thanks to those of you out there who contacted me following the previous broadcast and who told me that I should just relax and just go with the flow. Those who did listen to the previous programs know that I have been somewhat apologetic in the fact that, you know, I'm slowing down, folks. As I said, I'm slowing down. I'm not getting younger. And I don't feel as sharp as I did in years past. But somebody said, just relax and just say what comes to mind and don't worry too much about it. So I'm going to follow that advice, folks, and not worry too much about it and just say what I feel needs to be said and let the chips fall where they may. Anyway, folks, we have an extremely loaded program lined up for today. Extremely important stuff. Lots of sound bites, lots of news stories to cover, and it is a continuation of the previous program that we did dealing with Israel's plans of destroying the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Al-Aqsa, the sanctuary, the entire section. Thanks to one of my closest friends and brilliant researcher who sent me some very interesting articles on this, we have a whole new perspective to put on all of this as to why Israel intends to destroy all of this and where it's all headed. Anyway, let's see, where do we even begin? Well, I guess, folks, what we need to do is to review the thesis that we put forth on last week's program, which is the fact that Israel intends to destroy the Al-Aqsa compound. It's not just a mosque. It's a small neighborhood unto itself, as I understand it, folks. You have the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and then you have what's known as the Dome of the Rock, the Haram al-Sharif, the noble sanctuary. And that is the famous eight-sided structure with the Golden Dome on top of it. And this is not a mosque. It's more like a religious shrine, as I understand it. And my Muslim listeners out there, I'm sure you will be able to enlighten me on that if I have gotten my facts wrong. It's like a shrine. It's not a place where they come to pray, but rather it's there set up as dedication for, I believe that it's the rock from which Muslims believe that Muhammad ascended into heaven, or received a heavenly vision or something along those lines. I know there's some difference of opinion within Islam as to whether he actually descended into heaven or whether he received this heavenly vision. Anyway, that Golden Dome, folks, the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, as they love to refer to themselves, they plan to destroy that, to bring it to the ground, not one stone upon another. And they intend to do this because of the fact that they say it is sitting atop where their two temples previously stood before being destroyed, first by the Babylonians and then secondly by the Romans. And they intend to rebuild this temple, folks. Third time, they hope, is going to be the charm. Although the third time is more than likely now, ladies and gentlemen, going to result in the very same Armageddon, which, you know, all sorts of eschatology type people have been talking about, warning about, predicting for thousands of years. And not only are the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, not only are they not concerned about this, about World War III, about Armageddon, or any of the rest of that, but rather they consider this to be a necessary component to the to the dawn of this new history which they intend to create. You know, for better or for worse, folks, I spend a lot of time reading and researching, and, you know, my hyper-focus on this, obviously those of you who have been following the work that I've done for many years, has been the followers of Judaism, who, if we want to shorten the term, they are called the Jews, okay, the followers of Judaism. And, of course, we could get into all sorts of hairy discussions about, you know, who's a real Jew and who's not a real Jew. And, you know, that's a discussion that we can have at another time. Suffice it to say, folks, is that even those who claim to be secular, who claim to be irreligious or whatever, the fact that they adhere to a social code, that they identify as Jews, what that means is that they are, to some degree, they are followers of Judaism. Now, maybe they eat pork, maybe they eat crawdads, shellfish, maybe they turn on their lights, turn on and off their lights on the Sabbath. You know, all of these things being violations of the 613 rules which Moses set down. But that doesn't change the fact that they identify as Jews, okay? And I'll just give you just a quick, I hate to even make this kind of comparison, folks, because it's so out of, it's just completely improper to do it. But, you know, I am a Catholic. I consider myself to be a practicing Catholic. Now, I don't go to Mass every week on Sunday as I'm required to do for various reasons, not because I wouldn't, but rather because those of you who are Catholic and who have been, you know, following the death of the Catholic Church for the last, since Vatican II, since before Vatican II, as you know, it has become something of a, somewhere between a clown show and a freak show, okay? All we have to do at any given moment is read what the daily news is concerning the current pontiff in Rome, Francis Bergoglio, Pope Francis. Some of the nutty things that he said, some of the nutty positions that he's taken. And he, by no stretch, is the first. I mean, this has been going on ever since 1958. So, you know, because of this, we as a family here, we have to be very careful about where we go, because there are things that I simply don't want my, especially my children, to hear from the pulpit. Not to mention just the silly things that take place, you know, the changes. Yes, folks, I am one of those old, traditional, you know, old-fashioned Latin Mass Catholics, and I don't want to hear any electric guitars or drums or banjos or anything like that. But just as importantly, I don't want to hear sermons, you know, advocating that we go to war in the Middle East or that we, you know, all of the silly things. Anyway, nevertheless, I know that's kind of a long, what do you call it, an off-ramp. I consider myself a practicing Catholic, even though I don't go to church every Sunday. And likewise, you have Jews who, even though they may not adhere to every one of the 613 laws of Moses. And by the way, folks, I know this is... This is another off-ramp here, but just to put things in perspective here when we're talking about these laws of Moses, you know, two of them that I really like to bring up for discussion, particularly with people who say that, you know, Moses was a forerunner of Jesus. He was, you know, he was a prototype, you know, that was perfected when Jesus came. and that, you know, that it was God's, the 613 laws found in the Torah, the laws of Moses, that Jesus adhered to these laws every bit as much as, you know, anybody else did. Well, there's a few of them that I like to bring up just in putting this thing in perspective and in underscoring why these people have been the problem in human affairs that they have been. And, okay, so there's the one, you know, that I do bring up, which is that, you know, on the Sabbath, there are certain things that a Hebrew, an Israelite, a Judean, a Judite, a Jew, whatever, is not allowed to do. One of which is you're not allowed to pick up sticks in order to light a fire, you know, to either heat your home or to cook your food. And anyone who does this, anyone who's seen picking up sticks on the Sabbath, he is to be stoned to death, okay? And then another one that I like to bring up in underscoring just how crazy all of this is the rule governing what is to be done with a wife whose husband has just been set upon, is being attacked by, who knows, robbers, bandits, whatever. And, you know, they're beating the hell out of him. And she's trying to rescue her husband, you know, from these guys who are going to kill him. And in the process, because, you know, in a fight, you know, fists are flying everywhere and people are, you know, grabbing a hold of one guy and pulling him off another and all the rest of it. Well, in the course of this, if she is defending her husband, if this Hebrew woman, this Hebrew wife is trying to defend her husband who's going to be killed right in front of her eyes, and accidentally, in the process of trying to intervene and save her husband, she accidentally gets hold of his testicles, her hand is to be cut off. Okay? Now, there's no mention in that particular section of the Torah, of the 613 laws of Moses, what's to be done with the robbers, okay? But her hand is to be cut off. Okay, that's just two of the crazy things that is found in this that we are told now and have been for close to 2,000 years, that this was the forerunner of Christianity. Somehow, folks, somehow, I don't see Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace and the Fountain of Mercy, I don't see him advocating anybody being stoned to death for picking up sticks on the Sabbath, nor do I see him as part of some crowd cheering on a woman's hand being cut off because she accidentally touched her husband's groin in the act of trying to save him from being killed. All right, let's see. How did we get off on that tangent? Okay, so the followers of Judaism, folks, the children of Israel, as they like to refer to themselves, they intend to bring down this mosque, the entire compound there. And the reason for it is because it is in place of where these two temples, which I refer to as the Temple of Doom, folks, where they stood. And their plan is, of course, to rebuild this temple, because without this temple, they have no reason for continuing on this thing. The Jewish God, the Hebrew God, the Israelite God, whatever we want to call him, he demands blood. He demands the blood of innocent, harmless animals. You know, not wild beasts like lions or tigers or snakes. I could certainly see, you know, performing a religious ritual around cutting snakes' heads off. I think that's perfectly fine, because especially dangerous snakes, poisonous ones. But, you know, sheep and goats and other, you know, gentle creatures that are not aggressive by nature. You know, I can't, what was that old song by Hall & Oates? I can't go for that. Yeah, I can't go for that. I can't even kill my own sheep, folks, and, you know, ostensibly we raise them for food, but I can't even do that. But nevertheless, you know, for 2,000 years, the Jews, the followers of Judaism, have been unable to do this thing that they are required by their religion to do, which is to sacrifice these animals and drain the blood from these animals and to saturate the altar with blood, the room, the sanctuary, whatever it's called, with blood, because this can only be done in the temple in Jerusalem. So they got to do this. They got to bring down that entire structure. And the way that they're going to do it, folks, is they are going to do it with an earthquake. Now, those of you who have followed my work over the years will remember that I used to do regular programs with my very good friend, Dr. Hisham Talawi. Or as Rita Duke, Rita from Texas, used to, when she would call into RBN, she'd call him Hersham. Hisham and I still speak, you know, on a semi-regular basis, and that's what I always refer to him as, Hersham. Anyway, he and I have a difference of opinion on this, because I said, you know, what's going to happen when the Jews bring this temple down via the mechanism of an earthquake? And he said, you know, I said, what are the Muslims going to do? And he said, nothing. There will be some protests for a while, but basically they'll forget about it. Well, I disagree with that, folks. I disagree. Every year during Ramadan, and as we approach Jerusalem Day, which will be coming up here in just about a week or so, where the Jews in Israel, they celebrate the retaking of Jerusalem in the Six-Day War, there's all sorts of violence taking place. Palestinians are fighting against these Israeli settlers and the IDF and things like that. So I think that if and when the Jews go forward with what they're planning to do in bringing down the mosque and the Dome of the Rock, that there's going to be a lot. And let me just add to that, okay? Even if my good friend, Dr. Talawi, is correct, Hersham, as Rita Duke used to refer to him, even if he's correct, that doesn't mean that the Jews are not going to let this thing go to waste, this opportunity, this disaster, okay? I think what they are planning to do, folks, remember, Benjamin Netanyahu, who was intimately involved with the destruction of the Twin Towers on 9/11, intimately involved in it, folks. The same man who, when he was being interviewed and was asked, you know, what he thought about the deaths of 3,000 Americans that day, when he was asked about it, he said, well, it's good. And then realizing that he was live on TV, he said, well, it's not good, but it will at least generate immediate sympathy for Israel. Now, the same Benjamin Netanyahu gave an interview. It was not an interview. He was speaking via live conference with some group of Hebrews in the United States, and he said, let us not forget that, now this was back in 2000, this was a decade ago, I think. He said, let us not forget, because this was in the waning days of, you know, Iraq's destruction and things were kind of winding down. The United States was, you know, now thinking about pulling out of these destructive conflicts and all the rest of that. He said to this group, he said, we will be at war with militant Islam for the rest of the century, for the next 100 years. Now, this was, I think, by my calculation, we still had 90 years left of it to go when he made this statement. And they haven't changed their minds since that time. Benjamin Netanyahu and his party have not changed their minds. We are going to be at war. And when he says we, folks, of course, what he means is the United States, Europe, you know, the Western Christian world, which is the modern day representation of the same old Roman Empire that destroyed the temple in 70 AD, not one stone being left upon the other, as Jesus Christ himself predicted would happen. Now, they haven't let up on this, folks, even though you know, there haven't been any new wars between the West and Islam per se. Yes, we had the years of ISIS, which was, you know, created by CIA and MI6 and Mossad, and with help from the Saudis, you know, where they trained these terrorists. They actually, what they did is they opened up their jails and they let the most dangerous, hardened criminals, murderers, rapists, whatever, let them out and then infused into them a good dose of this very violent religious extremist Takfirism, I think is what it's called, that has nothing to do with real authentic Islam, and then armed them, trained them to act as terrorists, and then set them loose in places such as Syria and other places. And so, yes, we had that, but, you know, the clash of civilizations, which Benjamin Netanyahu was referring to, which he was referring when he talked about being at war with militant Islam for the next 100 years, that clash of civilizations may have taken a brief pause, but it's about to get, it's about to have new life infused into it. And the way that, in my opinion, that they are going to do this is that when they bring this mosque down, when they bring that that golden dome down, the mosque and the golden dome, those are two different structures, they are going to have their operatives spread throughout the entire Western world, throughout every major city, every capital in Europe, through every major city in the United States, including Washington, D.C., okay? And they are, meaning Israel's Mossad, okay, because they use, they have a special branch of their Mossad who are Arabic Jews, speak perfect Arabic. They obviously can pose as Arabs. They use these types to go into Arab neighborhoods to spy and to carry out assassinations because they basically blend in. I can't remember what they're called. Mustavarim? That's something I should look up, actually. But we'll go back to that in a second. Anyway, what they're going to do, folks, in my opinion, is, let's see, hold on. Arabic speakers in Mossad. They are called the That's not showing up. Hold on. Very unprofessional of me, folks. I'm sorry. This is what I'm talking about not being as sharp as I was. Yeah, here we go. Here we go. I was right. Mistar Arvim. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, they will have their agents spread throughout all of the major capitals and cities in the West, and they will engage in massive, massive acts of terrorism. Mass shootings, bombings, poisonings, all of this. We may even see the use of a nuclear device, folks. And, of course, it will be blamed on Iran. Okay, maybe a dirty bomb, something like that. And it will be blamed on Iran, okay? Because Iran is one of those countries that Israel, the Jews have been celebrating the future destruction of Iran for 2,500 years, okay? That is what Purim is all about. It's not about this event that never took place 2,500 years ago, okay? It is a preemptive celebration of the destruction of Persia. Personally, I don't believe in the Jewish story, folks, found in the book of Esther, that the Jews rose up against the Persians and slaughtered 75,000 of them. Okay, not that they wouldn't, not that they're above doing something like that, okay, because as I said earlier, of course, the God that they follow, this Yahweh, he demands blood be shed, okay, he's just not happy if there isn't blood flowing. But nevertheless, those of you who have been paying attention now for, well, since 1979. You know that the Jews have been saying that Iran is on the verge of becoming a nuclear power and is going to nuke the world if she's not stopped. And the one who has been the most loud and the most prominent in this regard has been Benjamin Netanyahu. So this is how they plan to drag the West back into this clash of civilizations with Islam, is by bringing down the mosque by a quote-unquote natural event, meaning an earthquake, having the Muslims rise up and start, and like I said, folks, it's going to be these Mossad agents, same group that pulled off 9/11 and were cheering when the planes were crashing into the towers. It will be these elements that are probably already placed there now. They're probably already in these various locations. They're just waiting for the text or the phone call or the email with the code word telling them to go forward, right? And, of course, the way that it'll be portrayed is, look at these crazy Muslims. You know, they even blame earthquakes on Israel. And, of course, they have already set the narrative for this coming earthquake, folks, with what took place in Turkey and Syria just a few months ago. Massive earthquake that killed 50,000 people. And it is a fact, folks, it's a fact that the entire region there of the Levant sits on top of a major, major fault. There's a major earthquake that takes place just about every 100 years in that region. Now, what I'm going to do here, folks, is we're going to be listening to some very interesting news reports, all of them coming out of the Hebrew press. And just in case those listeners, the spies at the ADL and these other Jewish groups who are listening to this and saying, oh, listen how he disparagingly refers to the media in Israel as the Hebrew press. Well, folks, that's what they call it themselves. They refer to it as the Hebrew press because it is in Hebrew, which they consider to be the sacred tongue. Anyway, we're going to be listening to some of these news reports dealing with the subject of earthquakes in Israel and how the big one is coming. It's on its way. And how Israel's not prepared for it. So let's just sit back with our kombucha and give it a listen.
Earthquake swarms may sound like the plot to an apocalyptic movie, but they are a reality here in Israel, where groundwater extraction has increased the frequency and strength of such seismic activity.
We have a line of evidence that connect the groundwater to these activities. Mainly is from the seismology data, seismic data. Usually the relationship between the size of the earthquakes and the magnitude of the earthquake is in a normal place. There's a big one, a main shock, and then there's lots of smaller aftershocks. When fluid is involved, there's a lot of smaller magnitudes, and they're about the same size.
These smaller earthquakes, or earthquake swarms, differ from those caused by natural events, such as the shifting of tectonic plates.
A lot of these earthquakes that happened in the Sea of Galilee were very shallow. A lot of them were below 2 kilometers. Most of them were shallower than 5 kilometers. And these are the depths where groundwater is being affected by pumping. Usually earthquakes are deeper than 5 kilometers and they reach down to 20 kilometers.
There has been human-caused seismic activity elsewhere in the world, but Israel's differs in a key way.
What's happening now, mostly in the Midwest of the United States, the oil companies are trying to get rid of a lot of fluids, and they are injecting it into old oil wells. And that is what's triggering earthquakes. There are some places, like the Sea of Galilee, like some places in California, in Spain, and in Nepal, where we are close to active faults, and there's a lot of pumping going on, and that can also trigger earthquakes.
These earthquakes have been growing in strength, with the strongest in 2018 registering at 4.5 on the Richter scale. While this isn't the strongest recorded earthquake in Israel's history, it's the strongest that has been caused by groundwater extraction.
4.5 is the largest that happened because of this pumping. And yeah, it increased. 2013 was lower than that, was 3.2. And this year, last year was 4.5. There is a chance that there will be a bigger earthquake. We don't know that for sure yet.
But all hope is not lost. Israeli geologists and Israel's Water Authority are working to combat the issue before it becomes irreparable.
We're suggesting to monitor it more carefully and see if there, we can see some trends coming before the earthquake occur. And this includes more seismic monitoring carefully and also monitoring the groundwater level in a much higher sampling rate. The good news is that we are in good working relationship with the Water Authority. And we did agree to lower the pumping from the area. So hopefully there'll be less of this happening in the future.
Aurel Yerati, I-24 News.
Israel will face a major earthquake, and likely in the not-too-distant future.
History tells us that every about 100 years there is a very large earthquake, magnitude 6 or above, and every about 1,000 years there is a magnitude 7 occurring somewhere along the Dead Sea fault.
The last big one, 1927, the 6.2 magnitude Jericho earthquake, left hundreds dead and thousands of buildings destroyed. Is Israel ready for the next one?
It's partly prepared, and a committee was formed, and it is supposed to coordinate the activities of the different government agencies and the ministries. We also have developed a system for early warning, but this is good only when the earthquake is already happened.
An early warning system may help people scramble from buildings before a collapse, but too many of Israel's buildings are vulnerable to falling down. A report by the State Comptroller's Office last month said 600,000 buildings in Israel are not strong enough to resist quakes, including most of the earthquake-prone Galilee region. Buildings constructed before 1980 were not legally required to be that strong, but of $1.5 billion allocated to strengthen Israel's older buildings since 2019, less than $2 million of that has been used in the seismically active north. For many, the Tama Urban Renewal Program is the only chance at upgrading building safety. While construction is still outdated, emergency response is not, and has been preparing for a major quake for years. Israel's Home Front Command and emergency services practice regular drills and urge residents to make plans as well.
Make sure that you have an escape kit in your house. Make sure that all your family knows what to do in case of an earthquake. Go immediately outside. Go to your safe room or go to the stairways. Wait over there.
But ultimately, there are limits to both preparation and construction. A major quake that hits without warning, like the one that ravaged Turkey and Syria, would devastate Israel all the same. Meaning readiness is about preparing for the aftermath.
Now, of course, such earthquakes are not uncommon in this region, including historically here in Israel. Well, joining us for more on that is Dr. Itai Curzon, a seismologist at the Geological Survey of Israel. He speaks to us from Jerusalem. And Dr. Curzon, thanks for joining us. First of all, tell us about this earthquake in particular. Why now? Is it unusual? Could it impact elsewhere in the region?
It's a big earthquake. It's in a way two earthquakes, a doublet, we call it. Two earthquakes of the 7.8 and 7.7. One was in the middle of the night and the other one was in the middle of the day. With many, many aftershocks all along the East Anatolian Fault in southeast Turkey. It's a big earthquake, even in Turk. Way of looking in it, on it, they had many sixes, 6.5, they had seven in 99, and this 7.8 is a in a way it's a jump, and it's devastating, and it's a huge damage, and many casualties, and coming one after the other really increased, I suppose, the casualties much more.
Now I do want to ask you, it was felt by people in Israel, there were some tremors, but of course, historically, this area has also known devastating earthquakes, the most famous 1927, yes. Does this earthquake in Turkey, Syria, impact any on the possibility of something similar happening in Israel in the near future?
I'll say that every earthquake, especially the large earthquake, they impact each other. They may trigger each other. And so, so something that happens in the North Anatolian Fault, which is in a way a different system, but on the other hand, it's like a continuation 500 kilometers north of the Dead Sea Fault, which is our fault. And we suppose that something like that may impact, but it's something which is very hard to quantify and to see exactly what is the effect of large earthquakes in that area on our system. But it's, it certainly has some kind of an effect, whether it's an effect right. that will trigger another earthquake in our area or do the opposite, we don't know. We cannot predict right. in that level.
One last question. The government is advising residents, Israelis living in what's called the Bet-Shan Valley, the northern Jordan Valley, to boil their tap water before drinking. How could an earthquake in Turkey, Syria impact the drinking water in northern Israel?
Okay, the actual waves are being seen in all our sensors all around Israel, and are also seen in the water wells. We could see the water going up and down in some of the wells. It went up to 17 meter change. So imagine what a 17 meter in a borehole in a well of water. So there is a lot of mixing of water in the groundwater in Israel, that was created, generated by the large waves coming from Turkey, certainly. And that's why people were advised to boil them in the
All right. Well, so people certainly should. Dr. Curzon, thank you for joining us.
Okay, folks, I realize that was a bit of a departure there. But it's necessary in setting up the discussion here, which is that the geologists and the seismologists in Israel are all in agreement that Israel is due for the big one. It's going to come soon. And as you heard in that last newscast, Israel has been in the business of creating earthquakes for at least a decade, deliberately creating earthquakes in order to do experiments. I mean, this is how they justify it. But let me just read to you an article here. Hold on just a second. I should have gotten this all lined up ahead of time. I apologize. Okay, not that one. Yes, this is a story coming off of Israel National News, dated August 25th, 2009. Israel to simulate earthquake. Israeli scientists will simulate an earthquake in the Negev to fine-tune its earthquake advanced warning equipment. The Seismological Division of the Ministry of National Infrastructure's Geophysical Institute will attempt to simulate an earthquake in the southern Negev on Thursday. The experiment, financed by the U.S. Defense Department, is a joint project with the University of Hawaii and is part of a scientific project intended to improve seismological and acoustic readings in Israel and its environment up to a 600-plus mile radius. The experiment intends to improve the understanding of sound waves, blah, blah, blah. Israel will create a controlled explosion of 80 tons of explosive material, which will simulate the intensity of a tremor after an earthquake of number 3 magnitude. Natural earthquakes of a similar intensity occur in the Middle East region about once a week without the public feeling them. Okay, so basically we know now, folks, that for the last, 14 years at least, Israel, working along with the U.S. Defense Department, okay, not the U.S. Geological Survey, okay, but the U.S. Defense Department, that they have been experimenting in creating man-made earthquakes now for at least the last 15 years. I would venture to say, folks, that it's been going on a lot longer than that, because remember, that every president who becomes part of the U.S. president, who becomes part of the lodge, meaning the Masonic lodge, which is a given. I mean, you just have to be a Freemason if they're going to allow you. Remember what Freemasonry's ultimate goal is, folks. What is it? Go look it up. Go ask your average Freemason, you know, of whatever degree, and say, what, you know, I'm curious about what Freemasonry teaches and believes. I mean, I know you guys do a lot of charitable work. I know you ride around in those little buggy cars at the 4th of July parades and things like that. What are you out to accomplish? And they all will tell you, whether they are a third degree Mason or a 33rd degree Mason, the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Okay? Freemasonry is Judaism for Gentiles. This was the mechanism by which the Jews in the diaspora, and especially in the Roman Empire, the former Roman Empire, how they were able to organize the Gentiles, especially those Gentiles with money, with political power, things like that, to marshal those resources towards the rebuilding of the temple that was destroyed by the Romans in 70 AD. So the fact that the U.S. Defense Department is working alongside these seismologists in Israel in order to create a fake earthquake, man-made earthquake, makes perfect sense. Okay. Now, please, folks, don't machine gun me with comments about Freemasonry or protests about it or whatever. I'm just telling you that's what it is. I know there are many people in Freemasons, a very low order, and they're not involved in anything nefarious. It's just a drinking club for them. Fine, I understand that. Okay. But let's not forget why it was founded and ultimately what its aims are, which is the rebuilding of this temple. Okay. Now, I'm going to hit on a few stories here, folks, in order to better set up this discussion. As I think I said on the previous program, when the earthquake took place in February in Turkey and in Syria, massive earthquake, 50,000 people dead. I ran into this story that appeared in the Hebrew press, okay, and it talked about the damage that had been done to the Dome of the Rock as a result of this earthquake hundreds of miles to the north in Turkey and Syria. And because of that, the after effects that made their way south to Jerusalem caused some of the tiles in the Dome of the Rock to come crashing down. Now, the original story where I found this was this insane website. And by the way, folks, you know, like I've said before, I think it was on last week's program, you need to read. We need to read. We need to turn off the YouTubes and even the podcasts. Yeah, I know it's very ironic that I'm saying this right now, telling you to turn off the audiovisual stuff and to spend just a little bit of time every day reading, because it's the only way for this information to really get down in there into our brains, where we can begin the necessary process of intellectualizing this thing and understanding the deeper meaning. I spend minimum of 4 hours every morning just reading. And by the way, those of you who send me videos to watch and podcasts to listen to and things like that, I appreciate the effort on your part. And if I don't respond to it, it's because I probably didn't watch it. I probably didn't listen to it because I don't. I prefer to read, just because, it takes sometimes, including yours truly, it takes an hour in order to get out 5 minutes worth of valuable information. So anyway, we need to be reading religiously, no pun intended. We need to be reading this stuff. And so, all right, why did I go off on that off-ramp? Hold on. Yeah, folks, this getting old business is for the birds. Okay, so let's hit on some news stories here, indicating that indeed the Jews, meaning the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, as they love to refer to themselves, that they have every intention of bringing down this mosque. Oh, yeah. Now I know what it is. I apologize. Okay. So the website where I originally ran into this story of the damage at the Dome of the Rock was on one of these Nutter websites in Israel that is tailored towards the Christian Zionist types who are, you know, that they are totally under the spell of Zionism. They have completely forgotten about, you know, what has historically been the Christian perception of why the temples were destroyed, which was that this was a judgment against the people of Jerusalem, the people of Israel, because of their wicked ways. Anyway, I ran into this story talking about how some of the tiles had been destroyed, how they had fallen as a result of the aftershocks from this earthquake in Turkey, and how these tiles had anti-Christian messages written on them. Okay, so you can see how the writer of this story, how he's framing this. He's doing this in order to suck in these Christian evangelicals, okay, into... this is what's known in intelligence circles, folks, as OPE, meaning operational preparation of the environment. You get everybody expecting something so that when that thing happens, everybody's already prepared to drink it all in, to take it all in. So the news story appearing on this Nutter website, Israel365news.com, one of those sites, folks, that you should read religiously every day if you really want to be able to figure out where the Jews intend to take all of this. So I was curious. I hadn't at this point started theorizing that, you know, that this earthquake in Turkey was a man-made deal. I never discounted it, but I hadn't gone there yet. But what caught my eye in this story was the fact that they were trying to paint this as, you know, that there was a heavenly angle to this, you know, that the Dome of the Rock, that of all the tiles that could have come falling down, it was those tiles that had supposedly anti-Christian messages from the Quran written on them. So I asked my very good friend, that person knows who they are. I said, what is this business? Because I know there's nothing anti-Christian in the Quran at all. Yes, folks, I know that's a big shock to those of you out there of whatever Christian stripe, whether you're Catholic or Protestant, you know, who have been told that that Islam hates Jesus Christ and hates Christians and they're out to cut everybody's heads off who don't agree with them. No, there's nothing anti-Christian whatsoever in the Quran. In fact, if you want to read some of the most beautiful religious verse that you will ever experience dealing with Jesus and with his mother, read what it is that is found in the Quran. Anyway, I asked my good friend, who I always consult when it comes to issues such as this, and my good friend said, no, there's nothing like that at all. They're lying. They're making it up. And, you know, surprise, surprise, because if you, and I should have done it myself because they listed the actual surah, which means chapter, found within the Quran, where these the was inscribed on these tiles that fell. And sure enough, there's nothing like that at all. But folks, as you can imagine, for the average gullible Christian Zionist who loves the Jews more than they love Jesus Christ and who loves Israel more than they love their own country, this is exactly the kind of hog feed that they're going to swallow. And so when this event, which Israel is planning, when it happens, they will already be ready for it mentally when this earthquake takes place. Now, again, I want to hit on a couple of news stories here, folks. And like I said, I think it was on last week's program, this theory that Israel's going to do this, bring the mosque and the surrounding buildings down by an earthquake, I'm relieved to say that this is not this theory did not originate with me. I wasn't aware of it, but there have been those in the Islamic community, especially within the Palestinian community, have been talking about this for a long time, that this is how Israel plans to do this. Now, I ran into a few stories here that I want to touch on. Okay, first, before we talk about the earthquake, let's talk about some notable quotables where you have high-ranking members within Israel's political establishment talking about destroying the mosque and the Golden Dome, and then in order to replace it with the Third Temple. Okay, so here we have, this is from the Middle East Monitor, which is a very good outlet. You should read that, folks. You have to filter some stuff because they always feature some quote-unquote good Jew from Israel who, you know, opposes the militarism of Likud and all the rest of that, but who shouldn't be trusted nevertheless. This is written back in March of 2014. Israeli minister favors constructing temple in place of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Israeli Minister of Housing and Construction Yuri Ariel issued a statement on Friday indicating that he is in favor of constructing what he calls the Third Temple in place of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied Jerusalem. Ariel claimed that the first temple was destroyed in 586 BC, the second temple in 70 AD, and ever since the Jews have been mourning its loss, saying that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is currently in place of the temple, despite the temple being much holier than it, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is only the third most holy mosque in Islam. He then asserted that now that Israel has once again become a Jewish sovereign state, it's time to rebuild the temple. Israeli authorities have adopted a large-scale media campaign that claims that they are making, quote, archaeological discoveries in Jerusalem, especially around the Al-Aqsa Mosque, in an attempt to forge an imaginary Jewish claim to the land today by erasing Jerusalem's Muslim and Christian history. They are also spreading fake tales and myths about the existence of the alleged temple under the Al-Aqsa Mosque in order for them to justify their desire to demolish it. Next story, folks, excuse me. Let's see. Israeli minister demands halt to Al-Aqsa renovations. The Israeli Minister of Construction and Housing, Yuri Ariel. By the way, folks, if you ever want to see proof of the alien DNA that runs through these folks, just go to Google Images and type in Yuri, that's U-R-I, Ariel, and look for yourself and ask yourself whether or not we Gentiles share anything in common with them whatsoever, including our DNA. Anyway, let's see. Okay, yeah. So Israeli Minister of Construction and Housing Yuri Ariel asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to order the police to stop the renovation works carried out by the Islamic Waqf at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in East Jerusalem. The Waqf, folks, that's W-A-Q-F, as I understand it, they're the caretakers of the Al-Aqsa compound. The way that it works is that when Jerusalem was captured in 67 by the Jews, that they, for whatever reason, I have my own theory, which I'll explain later, but for whatever reason, they, I think it was just a PR deal. They allow the Muslims to maintain control over the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the compound, and I really do believe that strategically that's what it's about. Is just a PR deal, okay? Nevertheless, in a post on Facebook, Ariel asked Netanyahu to order the police to immediately halt all renovation work at the Al-Aqsa Mosque until the reasons for the renovations have been clarified and approved. So he's using a bureaucratic reason, but really what it boils down to is that he wants the mosque leveled, in order to build this third temple. Okay, next story here, folks. And this will be the last of the articles that I bring up. But it actually is the one, folks, that I believe seals the deal in terms of choreographing what it is that the followers of Judaism, the children of Israel, what they are planning to do. Netanyahu says, "We could destroy Al-Aqsa, but we don't want to." This is a story coming out of the Times of Israel, December of 2015. In a leaked recording, Prime Minister heard saying that smashing the mosque at the contested holy site would contradict everything that Israel stands for. Israel could easily destroy Jerusalem's flashpoint Al-Aqsa Mosque, but emphatically does not want to, so says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In remarks to Likud colleagues, Netanyahu said that Israel could rid the Temple Mount of the mosque with little effort, but that to do so would contradict everything that Israel represents. If Israel, quote, wanted to destroy Al-Aqsa, it would not require a great effort, said Netanyahu, but it goes against everything that we stand for. And this was a recording that was played on Israel Army Radio. Okay, now, folks, that's basically how we know that this is what they intend to do. Okay, they want to make sure that they have established their alibi, okay, so that when it does happen, they can point to it and say, see, look at this, look at this. You have Netanyahu himself on tape saying that if they wanted to, they could destroy the mosque, but that they don't want to because it goes against everything that that Israel stands for. Well, folks, I'm just going to, I mean, we know that Netanyahu is a liar, okay? We know that he's very cunning, he's very, you know, he's a great strategist, okay? But that section where he says that it is against everything that we stand for, I want you to listen carefully to this. Now, this, again, this comes from the Law of Moses, folks. This is from the Old Testament, the Torah, whatever you want to call it. These are the instructions that Moses is giving to the children of Israel prior to this invasion of the Holy Land. And he says, when the Lord your God brings you into the land that you are to possess and drives out the many nations larger and stronger than you, and when the Lord your God has delivered them over to you and you have defeated them, then you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them. Show them no mercy. Do not save alive anything that breathes. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, and burn their idols in the fire. For you are a people holy to the Lord your God, who has chosen you out of all of the peoples on the face of the earth to be his people, his treasured possession. Book of Deuteronomy. Now, that last section there, folks. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones. That means to destroy their mosques and their churches and their shrines. Anything that is not Jewish needs to be destroyed. Okay. And Netanyahu, who is indeed, folks, a very religious Jew, a Torah true Jew, this is exactly what he intends to do. Now, some very interesting information that I'm going to pass along to you. That I uncovered this week in the course of doing research for this program today. So, of course, we know Al-Aqsa is an Islamic religious structure. Okay. However, folks, it didn't begin that way. Okay. It actually is very Christian in its structure, very Roman in its structure. Now, I'll tell you why. I read several articles dealing on the history of how Al-Aqsa came about. And that dome, folks, for your homework for this week, I want you to go and go onto Google Images. Yes, look up Uri Ariel, okay? But also look up the dome that is associated with St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Okay. Also, look at the domes that exist throughout the West, meaning today's version of the Roman Empire, where the legislative bodies meet to debate laws, okay, such as the Capitol Dome. Every state capital in the United States, if you go to their, you know, their House of Representatives or whatever, I think all of them have that dome. It's a Roman structure. That dome is a Roman structure. And originally it was used as a mausoleum in ancient Rome for the remains of emperors who had passed away. They were referred to as martyrium. All of the archaeologists in the know say that the Golden Dome, the Dome of the Rock, got its idea, the idea for putting that dome atop of it, was taken from the Romans, especially the Byzantine Roman Empire. And of course, we know, folks, we know how the followers of Judaism view the Romans. They are the most hated of all their enemies. It was the Romans who destroyed the temple, who destroyed Jerusalem, who drove the Jews out of Israel and caused the 2,000 years of wandering and wailing and all of the rest of that. But especially the Roman emperors, such as Vespasian and his son Titus, and especially Hadrian, folks. He was the last of the Roman emperors. He was the one who finished this 200-year war against Judea, and who forbade the Jews from ever coming back to Jerusalem, ever, under pain of death, except for one day out of the year they were allowed to return, which was their feast day of Tisha B'Av, which is the ninth day of the 11th month in the Hebrew calendar, where they were allowed to come back to Jerusalem and look at the devastation, and that was it. So we know how much the Jews hate the Roman emperors. That's number one. Number two, the structure of the Dome of the Rock, the building itself, is an eight-sided structure. Now that symbol, that's that eight side, that octagon, is a very typical, very common association with Islam. Okay, if you look at Islamic, not cartography, calligraphy, things like that, you'll see that a lot. Whereas, you know, in Judaism, you will see hexagons, you will see six-sided figures. In Islam, you will see eight-sided figures. And most people have assumed that the structure itself, the shape of the Dome of the Rock being an eight-sided structure, that it was Islamic. But that's not what it was, folks. There was a church, there was a shrine and a church that was set up in honor of the Blessed Mother, the Virgin Mary, Mother of Jesus, in Bethlehem, that was an eight-sided structure. And this was a shrine that was built atop the rock that, according to Christian legend, was the rock where the Virgin Mary sat on her way to Bethlehem when she was about to give birth to Jesus, that she dismounted the donkey that she was riding on, and she sat down and rested on that rock for a bit before continuing the journey. And so in years later, the Christians built this church over the spot of this rock, just as in the Dome of the Rock, folks. There is this rock in the center of it that is said to be the place where Muhammad ascended into heaven. Again, we don't, you know, there's some controversy as to whether Islam takes that literally or whether it says that it's a figurative thing. Anyway, there was this church. It was called the Church of the Resting, or the Church of the Sitting, meaning sitting down and resting. and it was this eight-sided, very original. It was a very unique thing, this eight-sided structure. And the archaeologists who have studied the history of archaeology in that region say that more than likely that the structure for the Dome of the Rock is based upon the church that was built in honor of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the most hated woman in Judaism, folks. Jesus, her son, the most hated man, and Mary, the woman who bore Jesus, the most hated woman. So it's not just that the Dome of the Rock is sitting on top of the ruins of the temple. It's not just that it's an Islamic, quote-unquote, an Islamic structure that has to be destroyed according to the rules laid down by Moses. It's also the fact, folks, that it is Roman in its design, in terms of the dome, and that originally the original structure upon which this is based was a church set up in honor of the Blessed Virgin Mary, whom the Jews despise. So, I realize we're kind of all over the map here today, folks. A lot of information to digest, process. But this is how they're going to do it. They're going to use an earthquake, a quote-unquote act of God, to bring this down. This is going to, because the Muslims have been warning that this is coming now. They've been warning about this for decades, that Israel is going to create an artificial earthquake in order to bring down Al-Aqsa. When it happens, the Muslims are going to begin rioting, and then Israel, using her agents of destruction spread throughout the world, is going to begin a reign of terror that will be blamed on Muslims in much the same way as 9/11 was, in order to jumpstart this clash of civilizations, this war between Christianity and Islam. And let's not forget, folks, what it was that, what's his name, Baruch, the former Israeli prime minister, what he said in his tweet just a few weeks ago, that Israel has been taken over by a bunch of messianic nutcases who are out to start, he said, nuclear-armed nutcases, out to start a war with Islam over the Temple Mount. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will say again what I have said before. All of the ingredients are laid out before us. As I think I said on the last program, if you go to, I love to watch these cooking shows, folks. I'm always looking for new recipes for Middle Eastern dishes, for Italian dishes, Greek food, love Greek food. So I watch a lot of these cooking videos. I know I'm disobeying my own, but this is different, okay? This is for pure entertainment, to watch them cooking this wonderful exotic food from the Mediterranean area. But if you turn down the video or the audio and you're just watching the video and you're watching your chef and he's got all of his ingredients laid out, okay, he's got a couple of cans of tomato paste. He's got onions. He's got garlic. He's got oregano. He's got basil. And he's got spaghetti, uncooked spaghetti. Well, it's not hard to figure out what we're having for dinner. You don't have to wait for the whole thing. You don't have to listen. You just have to see the ingredients there to figure out what we're having for dinner. And likewise, with this apocalyptic dish that Netanyahu and these Jewish nutcases are planning for us, it's not hard to figure out what they're planning and how they plan to do it. And it could happen any minute, any second. Like I said, or as they said on the videos dealing with these earthquakes, they said every century or so, Israel has a big one. And they said, I think, if I'm thinking off the top of my head, that the last big one was in 1927. And this is 2023. So we're only 4 years away from that. Anyway, folks, if you enjoyed this program, please pass it along. The more discussion that there is on this, folks, the more that people are aware of these things, of this, the more that they're aware of this cauldron of boiling stew, this apocalyptic stew, which the followers of Judaism are preparing for us, the more the people are aware of it, and the more that they're talking about it, the more that the people who are planning to bring this about are forced to recalibrate and to start over again. So if you liked this program, if you found it entertaining, if you found it intellectually interesting, pass it along and put it into your discussions, you know, the comments that you leave on various websites, the discussions that you have with the people around you. Tell them that this is what's coming. And who knows, folks, maybe we will, in the process of doing this, maybe we'll get a miracle. Also, folks, equally important, if you liked this program and if you would like to see this program continue, consider tossing a few nickels and dimes into the coffee can that you can access if you just go to the website, and you'll see on the front page it'll say you can donate to this. You can donate to this website. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Until we meet again, God willing, stay smart, stay safe, stay strong, and let's all hope for it.